Over his long career, Barry Diller has founded and led some of the most influential media companies in America, creating the Fox Broadcasting Company, running Paramount Pictures, and more recently, leading Interactive Corp as it grows into a multi-billion dollar internet company. But when Diller dropped out of UCLA just after one semester, his future success was far from secure as he went to work in the mailroom at the William Morris Talent Agency. Diller was soon hired as an assistant to Helton Rule, who became president of ABC and promoted Diller to vice president of development, setting him on a path to success in the media industry. Diller recently sat down with Carlyle Group co-founder David Rubenstein. They spoke on David Rubenstein's Bloomberg television program, Peer-to-Peer Conversations.
So, Barry, you have had a very unusual career. Let me try to explain this. Many people...
I hope so, somebody would.
Okay. So many people have built media companies, and then sometimes they've run them. And a few other people have built internet companies, and sometimes they run them. What was it about your abilities, you think, to be able to do both?
I think probably it's probably like a couple of things. I mean, one is curiosity. I probably am more curious than those people who've been on one side or the other. I'm sloppily curious.
Okay.
The other thing is, it's about editorship. I mean, I think that certainly in media businesses, which is where you are choosing from, I'll do this, or I won't do that. True editorship.
You did very well in television, very well in movies. How did you gravitate towards the internet?
Well, it started because I don't really like repeating myself. I'd been in the movie and television business for 20 years, kind of running multiple like movie and television operations. And when I left, first of all, my biggest issue was I didn't want to work for anyone anymore because I'd been a corporatist. I'd always worked for a company. And I got to a point when I was 49 when I said, you either kind of are or you're not, and I want to be not having anyone's, so to speak, thumb on my neck. Mm-hmm. Also, I wanted to see if I could create something that was really my own.
Another way of saying this, at least the way I would maybe say it, maybe I had the same view myself, is they could do this, why can't I do that? You didn't have that view?
No. I mean, because I've always kind of acted out of more insecurity than security, and I probably didn't think that the people, I mean, I thought a lot of the people I worked for were idiots, but in the main, I certainly didn't think that, in fact, I could do that. The question for me was, could I do that?
Let's go back through how your career unfolded before we go to what you're doing today. So you grew up in Beverly Hills, and you went to college initially at UCLA?
You know, it's a bit of a fake out, and I've never absolutely clarified it. I mean, I went to UCLA for about 3 weeks.
3 weeks. What did your parents say when you dropped out?
Nothing more than they said before it, after it, or during. My parents were the most laissez-faire of parents, and they did not really have a point of view other than they probably assumed that they just support me for the rest of my life.
So were your parents wealthy?
Fairly, yeah.
So what did you do?
Hibernated for a while. I knew where my interest was pulling me. My interest was pulling me into entertainment. I'd always been...
Okay.
Fascinated by it. It was obviously a lot around me. My parents, my best friends, and their parents were mostly in various forms of the entertainment business. So it was the allure, but I had no clue how to get there. I mean, there are no starting jobs. So I called my best friend's father, Danny Thomas, who was a famous comedian of the time, television star, and I started William Morris in the mailroom.
What do you actually do in the mailroom? Because I never could figure out how you can be in the mailroom and then you wind up being a CEO.
I didn't do what most people do in the mailroom. What most people do in the mailroom is they want to make contacts. They want to network with people. They want to meet people. And through that networking, if they impress people, they'll probably get a job. Or usually people in the mailroom wanted to be agents. The last thing in the world I ever wanted to do was be an agent. I read the file room of William Morris for almost 3 years. And essentially, the history of the entertainment business from A to Z. And that was my schooling.
Okay. And then how do you break out of the mailroom to get into a real job?
So what happened, serendipity, most of my career is some cross between serendipity and curiosity. Anyway, I had met a middle-level executive at ABC named Leonard Goldberg. He was a New York executive moving to Los Angeles to become the vice president of current programming, a kind of like very middle-level job.
Right.
But I thought he was really smart, and I didn't really have some yen for television, particularly. But, you know, I was sparky, and I was interested. I knew I couldn't stay at William Morris any longer, so he asked me to be his assistant. I said yes.
Okay.
The day that I left William Morris and was going to start at ABC, they fired the czar of ABC programming, and they reached down and they picked my guy, Leonard Goldberg, to be head of programming. So I went from this little tiny thing to moving to New York to becoming the assistant to the head of programming at ABC, and within 6 months I was kind of running the program department.
You're on your way, and eventually you became the president of ABC Television, is that right?
Yeah, and, well, the entertainment part, yeah.
Entertainment part. And you invented something that was novel at the time. It's called the Movie of the Week.
We had the idea of saying, well, rather than buying mostly bad movies and putting on continually television series that tend to fail, why don't we see if we could make a movie every week? And we chose this 90-minute form rather than 2 hours. And so it was very ambitious because it hadn't been done before. And everybody thought they would fail because that was not the diet of television at the time. And as most things, you know, what everybody thinks is going to fail.
Okay. Well, it worked.
It worked.
So you're doing very well, and you're in your mid-30s, if that?
No, I'm 30. I was just 32.
All right, 32, but you're pretending you're 33 or something, or 34. So you want to exaggerate how old you are because you're so young, right?
No. I love being young. I hate being... Now, you know, the idea is... I've gone from the youngest person in the room to the oldest person in the room.
I know this phenomenon.
It's a bad transition.
Believe me, I know it.
Yeah, no. Anyway, I was 32.
All right, so you're 32 years old, and you're getting a lot of attention. So then, I guess, somebody called you up and said, would you like to run Paramount Pictures? Is that how it happened?
Charlie Bluedorn, who I'd gotten to know very early, like when I was like a year or two at ABC. He had just bought Paramount at the time. Paramount had been failing, which is how he bought it. And he wanted to sell these movies to television, old movies from Paramount's library, all of which were terrible. And I gave him a very hard time. He liked that. We began a relationship.
Okay.
And some years later, he kept wanting me to come to Paramount, and I didn't want to go. I really didn't want to leave ABC particularly. But finally he said, all right, I'm going to make you chairman and chief executive of Paramount. I said, Charlie, I have no experience in the movie business. Yes. We've made 75 movies for television. But you really want to make me chief executive? He said, yes. And I said, actually, kind of reluctantly, I went to Leonard Goldenson, who's the founder
of ABC.
And I told him about this. And he said, well, you have to go. And I said, really? And it's true. I know it sounds quite crackers, but that is what happened.
Now, when you're running Paramount, you produced some of the most famous movies in American history.
First, we failed, because I actually believe that in order to figure stuff out, you're going to make a mess.
So what did you make a mess of?
We made a series of awful movies. But I was learning the movie business. We were in last place, and I was kind of on fumes at that time, and saying to Charlie, you know, maybe this hasn't worked out, but we were... In that 2 years, we were laying really good development tracks for the future. So when it turned, which it did in the third year of Paramount, when we went literally from sixth to first place, it was a big, big dramatic turn.
Some of the ones that I remember were very big hits. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Did you know that was going to be great from the beginning?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's rare that you really know from the beginning, but did you remember seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Of course.
Okay, so you remember the opening scene When he goes to the tomb, and then the big ball.
Oh, I remember that.
Okay.
Very famous.
Right. Okay. That was about 12 pages of the script. By the way, I finished that 12 pages of the script saying, if we can shoot this, this is going to be fantastic. Of course, it will cost more than any movie ever made because of whatever, whatever. But that script rarely, I mean, it's happened 10 times maybe. When you finished that script, you said, smash.
But you also did television production, and as I remember, you had Cheers. Was that one of yours? Cheers and
Happy Days.
Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're doing a great job. People are telling you're great. And then all of a sudden, you left Paramount to run 20th Century Fox.
Yes, and Rupert Murdoch came in, and at the same time, I'd always been interested in the idea of a fourth network. And so, again, serendipitously, John Kluge owned a group of television stations called Metro Media.
Right.
And he was passing through Los Angeles. And I said to Rupert, why don't we buy his television stations and start a fourth network? And Rupert, the greatest player, gambler, but on strong instinct with nothing to back it up, but thinking this was a good idea, said yes. I said, yes? I said, they're going to cost $1.2 billion. He said, that's okay. And not more than an hour later, we shook hands with John Kluge on buying his television stations.
So you then have that, and you're building the fourth network.
Yeah.
And you did. And people thought you were crazy,
yes,
you did it.
Well, the best position is for people to think you're crazy.
So
that's the great good luck.
And then you decide to leave.
I got to the point, 49, and I said, you know, I've certainly been successful, but none of this is mine. And I mean, and nothing is ever yours, but it wasn't, was, and I went to Rupert and I said, I want to be a principal. And Rupert did me the greatest good service. He said, there's only one principal in this company. It's all very nice that you know, want to be, but that's reality. And I went away thinking, oh my God, what a terrible thing. What a terrible, harsh thing to be told. Now, I have to actually either decide that I'm going to act on it or not. So I left.
You've been successful at everything you had touched. Now you have to start your own business. So you don't know which
one.
Well,
I've been unsuccessful at each step of the way. It started off very unsuccessful.
But in the end, each one worked
out. Yeah, they worked out.
So you decide you're going to change your life, become a principal, but your problem is you don't know what you want to be a principal of.
The things that people wanted me to do, of course, was to run a movie company, take a chief executive job in this part of the entertainment and that part of the, and all of that stuff I had really no interest in.
So you started to buy things?
My wife had gone to a place called QVC.
Your wife is Diane von
Furstenberg, and she's a designer. And she went to QVC because they had wanted her to sell clothes on QVC. And she said, you have to go and see what this thing is. It's the most amazing thing. So I go there, Westchester, Pennsylvania, and I see in a, 10-foot square, 100-foot square stage, the use of computers and television sets and telephones. And me, who only knew about screens being used for narrative, I saw screens being used for something else. It was interactive.
Right.
There was a computer screen that when they offered a product, you would see the calls would be on this computer screen, seeing them rise and fall and rise and fall and rise and fall. And the whole thing was this very early kind of convergence. And again, my only thing about screens was storytelling. And here was another use of a screen. And it intrigued me.
Right.
And then, again, serendipity, I'm having lunch with Ralph and Brian Roberts.
Who owned Comcast.
Who owned Comcast, which owned, and they wanted me to do a production company. And I was so bored with this lunch. I thought, when is it going to be over? I can go home. And as you do in those kinds of situations, I didn't want them to talk anymore about trying to lure me into this thing. So I said to Ralph Roberts, tell me your story. He tells me the story. And in the story, he's telling me how he started this thing called QVC. I said, stop. Tell me more about QVC. He starts telling me more about QVC. I'm
drawing him out.
And I said to him, what are you going to do with QVC? He said, well, the founder is going to retire. I said, oh, really? I said, what is he going to do? He said, well, he's going to sell his, I said, could I buy his interest? Ralph said, yes. I walked out of the Four Seasons Hotel knowing what I was going to do. I went to QVC, took an interest in it, and that was 3 years. Again, this was primitive convergence of these computers and telephones, and that was 3 years before the internet really started for normal folks. But, so it was luck and circumstance.
But at that point, people had said, Barry Diller, who has been a big...
Yes, they said I was... Then they said I was crazy.
And he's a low-rent...
Then they were sure I was crazy.
Low-rent QVC.
Absolutely.
What is he
Where
doing?
Is he going? He went to Westchester, Pennsylvania. We will never hear about him again.
Okay. So QVC, you had a stake in it. Ultimately, you grew it. You started buying internet-related companies, things that sold things over the internet.
Yep.
Like Ticketmaster or things like that. And then you put them into a company called IAC. Did you know at the time each of these would probably work?
Oh, no. Of course you didn't. So, and by the way, many of them didn't.
But the most successful of them, is that Expedia? Is that the biggest
Expedia
of them?
Expedia is probably the biggest. But, you know, they range from Live Nation, Ticketmaster, Match.com.
So you own this company, and it's now become a very big public company.
Yeah.
Roughly $250 million was put in to buy the company's initial that you started with, and today that's worth $57 billion, more or less.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. As
that's
I think
bad.
I mentioned, your stock is up 80% this year. So how are you going to top all that in the business world? You can't do much better than you've done.
I'll find something else to fail at first.
Today, the internet is still very much part of our lives.
Yeah.
What about television and motion picture? Do you think they'll continue to be important parts of our lives?
I think the movie business is over as a really cultural institution of any great value. Because the movie business is now about, primarily it's about making sequels and big, huge, mega movies that are more marketing things than anything else. So I think movies have very much receded. I think television is, of course, as we all know, it's having a great period because of the incredible optionality in television and the craft.
Are you worried that four or five technology companies can control our culture and our lives so much, or you're not worried about that?
No, I am worried about that. I've always thought concentration... Too much concentration is bad, and that goes against the consolidating principles, which are forcing consolidation everywhere and will continue to. And I think that's not a good thing. But
you expect the movie companies and television companies will ultimately be bought by these big technology companies?
I'm not so sure they'll buy them. I think they'll actually supersede them. I mean, the thing is that that the two companies that are really dominating right now are Netflix, grown totally outside of the infrastructure of the entertainment business, and Amazon, whose business model is absolutely antithetical in a way to what the business model of entertainment has been, which is you put on a show and people like it and the audience comes and they pay you. Their business model is to sell subscriptions to Prime.
Right.
And just as a subsidiary, they give you good stuff on the side.
It's worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
You've spent a lot of time on philanthropy recently. You committed to the Giving Pledge that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates developed, and you're one of the original signers of it.
Yep.
And one of your philanthropies in New York is something called Highline.
What the Highline was an elevated railroad track that hadn't been used for probably 50 years. So what we did, it took 10 years, we created this elevated park. We thought the first year we'd have 350,000 people. 3 million came the first year, and last year, 7 million. So it's been this.
Right. It's been very successful.
Great thing.
So that prompted you to say, well, if I did this, maybe I could do something else.
Something even stupider. It happened this way. They came and said that they were going to tear down a pier because it was falling apart. And would I be interested in building a new pier? And I said, well, not if it's a pier. What you're planning to do is boring, but if I could be ambitious about it, about maybe building an actual island in the park that's not shaped like a pier. If you're up for that, I'm up for it. And of course, we started with, you know, kind of a narrower vision. And like all crazy projects, it's
all right.
Boom.
And people can go there and.
Yes, it's a. The idea is that, you know, there's. I love public art. The idea of making a public space, I think, is great. So, it is a park for people. It's also a performance center. If we pull it off,
hey.
It's almost like walking on the. You get to it by two bridges, and walking to the bridge, you leave this city of concrete, mostly concrete, and stir and all this stuff, and you'll go to Oz.
Okay, and what's it going to be called?
Pier 55.
Not Diller Park?
No.
You don't want that?
No.
So today, if you were starting your career all over again,
yeah.
What would you go in? What area would you go into?
I have no idea. I mean, I think I've never really had a goal. I've never said, I want to be that.
Okay.
So to me, it was whatever I was curious about.
Now, one of the things I like to ask people about is leadership. What do you think the skills are that you had as a leader?
Probably kind of often blind willfulness. I think will and some energy to propel it. But the stronger the will, that at least allows people to follow.
If you were to say today what you're most proud of, what you have achieved with your life, what would you say?
Probably my marriage.
Okay. So you got married in 2001.
One.
And to a very famous fashion designer. Does she give you fashion advice in dressing you or not really?
Take a look, no.
Well, I don't know. But do you give her advice on internet-related things?
No. I mean, her instincts transcend fashion. And so anything that comes up, her instincts are pretty damn good. And so I listen.
Okay.
And she occasionally listens to me.
Okay. So you have a very happy life.
I'm so lucky.
Well.
Say thank you. That's what I do all the time.
Congratulations for what you've achieved, and thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure.